that is a few years ago, a college professor did the same thing. He tried the same thing to his college class. But in his class, he had a young man who had just gotten out of the Marines and was there on GI Bill taking a college class, and he was in the class that day as that professor tried to pull the same stunt that Robert Ingersoll did. And he got up in front of his class, and I'll give God 3 minutes to strike me dead, to prove that He exists. I'm going to prove to you there is no God, because I'm going to challenge Him and blaspheme Him, and if He doesn't do anything in 3 minutes, we'll know He doesn't exist. And so he went through the same thing, 3 minutes, 2 minutes, 1 minute, about 30 seconds, that Marine got up off his chair, came up and just decked that guy, nailed him right between the eyes and knocked him backward off the platform. And the professor got up and said, "What in the world are you doing?" He said, "Well, God was busy, so He sent me." We're looking tonight at the subject of stewardship. Stewardship. On Wednesday nights, we're covering areas of what we call first things first. These are the basics for our Christian life. The Bible, the church, assurance of salvation. Not doctrines, but practical things. And one of the practical things that we need to learn in our Christian life to properly grow is the idea of stewardship. Now, notice steward ends with a D, not with a T. All right, it's not steward, not the little mouse. This is steward. All right, stewardship. Our key verse tonight, and we'll not turn there, we're going to be in Mark chapter 6 in just a minute, but our key verse for tonight is Luke 12:42. And the Lord said, "Who then is that faithful and wise steward?" The Lord gave a parable that we'll look at later in Matthew 25 about each one of us being a faithful and wise steward. Steward. Now, a steward, and I type this out, a steward is one who manages and administrates what has been entrusted to him by another. All right, that's what a steward is. I tried to find an equivalent word, and there really is no, we could say a manager, but a steward had more responsibilities than a manager. You remember Abraham, in talking to God, said, "I have no son, and all I have is Eliezer, my steward, Eliezer." Abraham's steward, Eliezer, he was the overseer of all of Abraham's affairs. Abraham was a very wealthy man. And Eliezer oversaw all of his finances. He oversaw all of his family. This was a man within the household that looked out over all these things. That's what a steward is. One who manages and administrates what's been entrusted to him by another. The things don't belong to the steward. He is just handling them properly for his master. God has entrusted us to be stewards of what He's given us. And that's what He's given us. We're going to talk about what that encompasses. We only think we've got a narrow focus and think of one thing. But what God has blessed us with and given us encompasses many different things. And what God has done is He's entrusted us to be stewards. You know, in that parable in Matthew chapter 25, we always quote this verse, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." You know who He's speaking to there? Not everyone. He's speaking to the steward that did a good job. There's a steward in that parable that didn't do a good job. He didn't hear, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." So the idea is that not every believer is going to hear, "Well done, thou good and faithful." It all depends on how well we perform our duty of stewardship. That's our responsibility right now as believers, to rightly administer and govern the things which God has entrusted us with. Psalm chapter 24, verse 1, you see it as we go down the page here. Psalm 24, 1 says, "The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof." There's nothing you and I have that wasn't given us by God, given to us by God. Anything you have, whether it's your health, your wealth, your education, anything you and I have, we have because by the hand of God. The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. There's nothing we don't have. Every unsaved person needs to realize anything they've gotten by the grace of God. So everything belongs to God, and the Bible says in 1 Timothy 6:17 that God giveth to us richly all things to enjoy. God has entrusted to you some things that are identical to what He's trusted to me, but He's entrusted to you something that no one else has been entrusted with. There are similarities in our stewardship, but there are also differences in our stewardship. Each one of us individually stands before God as a steward. What God has entrusted me with is not identical to what God has entrusted my wife with or my children. And we all give an account individually for our stewardship before God. That's what life is now. It's a preparation for our accountability before God. How we're handling this responsibility of stewardship. Can I tell you this before we even start? This is intimidating. This really is where the rubber meets the road. Because if you come through the end of this and say, I'm a great steward, then you're not paying attention. Because we all have room for improvement in stewardship and what God's entrusted us with. So let's look at three things, and there are many, and I had to whittle this down. Three things that God has entrusted us. Number one, we are to be stewards of our time. We're to be stewards of our time. Ephesians 5:16 says this, redeeming the time. You know what that means? The word redeeming there means making use of, making profitable use of, making good use of. Redeeming the time. Did you know God's interested in how we spend our time? Sometimes we think, well, God, when I'm outside of the church building, my time is my own. No, everything has been entrusted to us by God. It all belongs to Him, even our time. Now, unlike the next two things we're going to look at in a few minutes, time has been given to each of us identically. We all have 365 days in a year. We all have 12 months and 30, 31, 28 days. We all have 24 hours in a day, 60 minutes in an hour, 60 seconds. It's all identical for all of us. We might have different things when it comes to the other two, but this, we've all got the same amount, and so that helps us to put it into focus. We need to take that time and redeem it. Make useful profit from it. Now, useful profit doesn't mean you're working and laboring to make money, because there are other things your body needs to profit from. Letter A. And look at Mark chapter 6, if you would, verse 30. I thought about typing these verses out as I did others, but I thought, no, I want you to look at Mark 6:30 and let us see it together. Mark chapter 6 and verse 30. John the Baptist has just been beheaded and the disciples just went out and buried him. They went and got the body and buried it. In verse 30, and the apostles gathered themselves together unto Jesus and told them, notice this, all things, both what they had done and what they had taught. I'm convinced that the reason the Lord picked the disciples, the 12 that He picked, is because they were hardworking men. Those fishermen, Matthew is a tax collector. They had some responsibilities and duties that were difficult, because the Lord knew if they were going to be His disciples, there was going to be some hard work ahead of them. At one point, he gathers the 12 around Him and He gives them the power to cast out evil spirits, to cast out devils. He gives them the commission to go into every city and tell them that the Messiah has arrived. They had an awesome responsibility. And in verse number 30, they come back and tell them all things they had done, both what they had done and what they had taught. Letter A in our outline, there's a time for labor. There's a time for labor. We're going to find two things as we look at this thing about being a steward for time. There are some people that work too much, and there are some people that don't work enough. All right? Let's throw out those two ends and let's get ourselves in the middle. And again, when we're in the middle, we're not saying that our work to rest ratio is 50-50, because that's not going to work either. But let's just get ourselves settled in there that there are extremes to both ends. So we're not going to try to give anybody an excuse for laziness, neither are we going to give them an excuse for overworking. Because there is a time for labor. The Bible says in Ecclesiastes, there's a time under the sun for everything. And there's a time to labor. I think our American proverb is this: a man works from sun to sun, but a woman's work is never done. And I know, I can tell you from firsthand experience, that when I go to bed at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, my wife is still in the kitchen or still taking care of kids or still doing something. And especially now where I'm not able to do a lot of helping around the house. That's just our labors consume our time and consume our day and eat up our energy. And it's not wrong. We're supposed to give ourselves to labor. We're supposed to provide for those that we care about and we love. And so these disciples came together and told Jesus, Lord, here's what we've done. And he wanted them, they wanted him to be proud of him in that regard for what they've done. Look, we're not lazy. We're not slothful. We've been out doing everything we're supposed to be doing. They came and gave a report to him of all the things they'd done and all the things they'd taught. And I'm sure the Lord was approving of all that they did. But notice what he does in verse 31. And he said unto them, come ye yourselves apart into a desert place and rest a while. You know what the Lord says when they come and talk about how hard they work? They said, that's great, fellas, but you need to come apart for a little while. The old saying is, if we don't come apart for rest, eventually we will come apart. And so the Lord saw the necessity and the importance of these men that were working hard at their task. He said, now if there's a time for labor, but let her be, there's a time for leisure. Finish verse 31. Rest a while, for there were many coming and going and had no leisure so much as to eat. No downtime. No resting time. No relaxation. No recreation. And our bodies need that. Now I know the expression is, I'd rather burn out than rust out. And I got that. And that for many of us, that is our problem. We're determined to burn out. We don't want to rust out. Nobody wants to rust out just from no use and no work and no labor. But we also don't need to burn out. The Lord saw the importance. You know what Jesus did every night, as far as we can tell? He slept. Now, he rose up early the next morning, went into a mountain to pray. We understand all that. But Jesus did what was humanly necessary. He found time for his body to rest. He knew that everything can't be all hard work and labor. There's got to be, he says in verse 3, he uses the word, rest, leisure. We need time for labor. We need time for leisure. Now, again, I almost feel like I have to give a disclaimer on these things. There are folks that give too much time to labor and not enough to leisure. And we all know there are folks that give too much time for leisure and not enough time for labor. So we're not talking about the two extremes. We're talking about a balance. And again, a balance does not mean 50-50. Although, isn't it unusual that the average work day is 8 hours? And the average night sleep is 8 hours. Now again, both of those vary different degrees, but I'm talking about the average. There's time for labor, there's time for leisure, let her see. If we're to be stewards of our time, there's also time for the Lord. Time for the Lord. You know Hebrews 10:25. Not forsaking the assembling of yourselves together as the manner of some is. Now, I know we use that verse as a catchphrase for all things, but I want you to look at the little chart I made out underneath that. This is something good I know when I was in the workforce, the secular workforce, sometimes we'd put little tables down like this and it was just kind of intimidating to realize how much time goes wasted, how much time we can't give an account for. If we sleep 8 hours per night, and again, that's what doctors recommend. Any more than that is too much. Less than that, we can survive 6, 7, 8. I know there's folks that go on 4, 4.5, 5 hours, but the average and what they recommend for good health is 8 hours per night sleep. If we sleep 8 hours a night, then 1/3 of our week is spent sleeping. 33%. And I've rounded these percentages. I did the math not in my head. I did it on a calculator, but I rounded these numbers off. If we sleep 8 hours a night, 7 days a week, 1/3 of our 168 hours in a week, 1/3 is spent sleeping. If we work 40 hours per week, and again, that's 5 days at 8 hours, that's 24%. It's 23 point something, but round off, 24% of our week is spent working. Then the third one, if we spend 30 minutes per meal, breakfast, lunch, dinner, sit down and eat, breakfast, lunch, dinner. 30. Now, ladies, that doesn't include preparation time. One of the injustices in life is that it takes 2 hours to make a meal that takes kids 30 minutes or 15 minutes to get through when they eat it. And then it takes another hour of cleanup after that. Something's got, they got, of all the things they can invent in this world, you think they could invent something that would fix that disparaging number right there. I think that's the most discouraging thing about Thanksgiving time is all the time it takes to make it, cook it, and prepare it, and how fast it gets annihilated when everybody gets to the table, and then how long the cleanup takes after that. And I'm not even involved in most of that, just the eating part. But if we spend 30 minutes per meal, 3 times a day, 7 days a week, that's 6%. So eating, working, and sleeping take 63% of the time we spend in our week. Now, do we have to work? Yes. Do we have to sleep? Yes. Do we have to eat? Yes. Those three things are necessary for survival. Those are necessities. Now, let's look at the other chart. If we go to Sunday school and morning service on Sunday morning, and here at Bible Baptist Church, that's 10:45 to 12 o'clock, 2 hours and 15 minutes. That is 1.3, and again, I rounded down because it was under 1.5. It's 1% of our week is spent Sunday morning in church, Sunday school, morning service, 1.3. If we come back at night for the evening service, that's 1 hour and 15 minutes, usually. That's a little under 1%, so I round it up. And if we're back on Wednesday night tonight, which you are, so you're putting in your full 3%. If you're here on Wednesday night, again, that's just 1 hour and 15 minutes from 7 to 8:15, just under 1%, rounding it up to 1. It's a total, an actual total of 2.6%, but we round it up. We're giving ourselves a good pat on the back. We spend 3% of our time in a week in church. Now, can we look at the 3% on one side and the 63 on the other? And obviously, we can't spend 63% of our time in church. We can't even that out. We can't even spend 50% because we have to eat, we have to sleep, we have to work. But would we all admit that 3% is not a lot of time to give to God? So I took this a little farther, and I didn't have time or space to put it on here, but I took it a little farther and figured if we read our Bible a half hour every day, 7 days a week, and if we prayed 30 minutes a day, 7 days a week, then we would be up close to 7% of our time spent doing spiritual things. Now, take the 63 and the 3 and put it together. We've got 66% of our time. We've got another 34%. What are we doing with it? Now, we're doing necessary things. But I wonder how much of that 34% is just wasted time. Time that we could be giving to God. Time that we are stewards of, that God's entrusted us with. And again, there are responsibilities that take some of that time, but just putting these numbers down there makes us realize how little time we actually give to God. And one of these days, we're going to bring this time back to God, and He's going to ask us what we did with it, and we're going to give an account. God is keeping a record like that. We're not, but God is keeping a record like that of what He's entrusted us with, including our time, and what we do with it when it comes to the Lord. We need to be seeking ways to give more time to God. Meditation, devotions, witnessing, whatever these things might be, that's how we give more time to God. We need to be striving to be better stewards of our time. Number two, we are to be stewards of our talents. Stewards of our talents. And the reference is Matthew chapter 25. And in Matthew chapter 25, Jesus tells a parable, beginning in verse number 14. For the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. And unto one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1,
to every man according to his several ability, and straightway took his journey. Then he that had received the 5 talents went and traded with the same, and made them other 5 talents. And likewise he that had received 2, he also gained other 2. But he that received 1 went and digged in the earth, and hid his Lord's money. You know the story, this parable of the talents. This man was going away, so he brought 3 servants together. To one he gave 5 talents, to one he gave 2, and to the other he gave 1. We learn from that the master gives disproportionately to people the talents that he gives. Again, when it came to time, we've all got the same 24-hour clock. When it comes to these things that we'll call talents, they are unevenly distributed. Some of us do not have as many of these goods as other people have. But God does not require the one with less goods to do as much as the one with more goods. And He doesn't let the one with more goods get away with it just because he's got more than the one that's got less. Everybody is individually responsible for what they've been entrusted with. To whom much is given, much shall be required. So the talents were not distributed evenly. Now, in the parable, talents were money. Look down at verse number 27. We're skipping a big part of this parable just because it doesn't apply to what we're looking at now. But when he came back to that one slothful servant, he said, "Thou oughtest therefore to have put my money to the exchangers, and then at my coming I should have received mine own with usury." So he calls those talents money. He gave the one 5 pieces of talent. 5 pieces of money, whatever the coinage, whatever it was back then, to another 2 and to the other 1. And to the one he gave 1 that buried it in the ground, he said, "You should have put it in the bank, where at least it would have gotten minimal interest. And at least there had been some usury, some interest when I came back." And so these talents here are speaking about money, but they represent abilities given to us by God. In the parable, it's not specifically about money that's been given to you, but the talents. I kind of like, you know, that word talent is a monetary word from that day, but how well it fits our day. The talents or abilities that God has given us today are to be used for God's glory. Some people have 5. Some people have 2. Some people have 1. And the person that's only got 1 doesn't have to worry that he's going to be required to answer like the one that's got 5 or that's got 2. He's going to answer for the one he's got. The one that's got 5 can't say, "Well, I'll lay 4 aside and I'll just use the 1," because after all, the guy with only 1 only has to use 1. No, he's responsible for the 5. What are those abilities? What are those talents? What are those gifts that God has given each one of us individually that we're to use for His honor and His glory? Not our own betterment, not our personal advancement, but for God's glory. Letter A. We are to give our natural abilities to God. We are to give our natural abilities to God. Anything that you are equipped to do, if a guy's a mechanic, he can use that for God's glory. He can have a business and have to make a living off of it, but then he can also go out of his way, we call it pro bono, he can go out of his way and do something for fellow believers or help a stranded motorist on the road do something. He can use his natural ability to help someone else. Whatever that natural ability is, I'll give you the best example I can think of this. It fits ours. You've always heard preachers say this. Everybody can do something in the church. Maybe you can't sing. Maybe you can't teach a Sunday school class. But you could change a light bulb. Anybody can change a light bulb. Anybody can change a light bulb. Brother Bill took a picture a couple weeks ago of Anthony changing that light bulb right above my head on the ladder, the A-frame ladder with the other stick going straight up the middle with his legs wrapped. He's a fireman. All right, he can do that. I can speak with most certainty. No one here is going to do that. He has an ability. And I'm happy to say he uses that ability for God. He's doing something that he is trained in his natural world to do, and he's using it for God's glory. What a blessing that is. Now, I don't know what abilities God's given you or I that we can use in the church, but that's what He's given those for. We are to give our natural abilities to God. Letter B, we're to give our spiritual gifts to God. Our spiritual gifts. Do you have, don't raise your hand, do you have the gift of gab? You are the perfect one to talk about the Lord. You know, not all of us have that gift. A lot of us would rather just sit in a room silently than sit in a room where a conversation's taking place. Not that I know that personally. I just know there's people like that. And if you have the gift of conversation, the gift of personality, to be out there like that, you have a wonderful gift. Use it for the glory of God. The gift of music, the gift of singing, the gift of finance, whatever it is, spiritual gifts. You read about the spiritual gifts in 1 Corinthians 12. Those were some extraordinary gifts given to the early church. There are way more gifts given today that aren't mentioned in that list. You know, music is not mentioned in that list. And there's a lot of people, very gifted people, when it comes to music ability. Wouldn't we all say, I'm not one of the five when it comes to music. I'm the one. I don't have that gift. If we don't have that gift, that's no problem. If we do have that gift, we need to use it responsibly before God. Whatever the gift is, and again, I don't have time to go through all of them, name all of them, but whatever gifts God has given us that could benefit the church collectively, we are to use those gifts. Here I am talking, Chuck's sitting right there. And Chuck helps the church out with heating and cooling problems. My heating cooling thing in my office, it never works right. I had it set at 68 today, and I turned it off when it hit 72. And that's not doing any fault of his. We know what the problem is. But these are the things. We have natural abilities and we use them for God's glory. We use them to please Him. Natural abilities, spiritual gifts. We are to be stewards of our time. We're to be stewards of our talents. Number three, we're to be stewards of our treasure. We're to be stewards of our treasure. If God has entrusted us with time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks in the year, all the years of our life, which God has them numbered. He knows exactly. He's got the accounting all done and figured out. And we're going to give an account one day. That's the word used. We're going to give an account of ourselves to God. All right, when we look at all these different things, we are to be stewards not only of our time and our talents, but stewards of our treasure. Now, can I say this? Along with talents, not all of those are distributed equally. Not everybody receives the same amount of talents, 5, 2, and 1. Not everybody receives the same amount of treasure. We all want to be wealthy. And we all make those plans. If I were to win the lottery, of course we'd have to find the ticket on the ground because none of us gamble. We don't buy them ourselves. But if I found that winning ticket on the ground at Speedway and I took it home and found out it won, first of all, as a preacher, I don't know what I'd do if they called the winning number and I had to admit I had it. Because you know people aren't going to believe you found it on the ground outside of Speedway. But we've all done that. If somebody died and gave me $1 million, and we are generous with money we don't have. Oh, I'd give this much to the church and this much to so-and-so and this much to the poor and this much. We're all generous with what we don't have. But we're not near as flexible as what we do have. Just like our time, 3% gets to God, sometimes our treasure is just as feeble. Sometimes our treasure is just as weak. And God is keeping track. That doesn't mean it's wrong. Like, it's not wrong to sleep 8 hours a night. It's not wrong to have 40 hours a week of work. It's not wrong to spend 30 minutes a meal eating. It's not wrong to have a house and a house payment. It's not wrong to have a vehicle and a vehicle payment. It's not wrong to have insurance, which is required, and you got to make payments. What we do with our money is not that. But I think if we make the list, we come up with the same inadequacy. We look at that list there of how much we spend on things and how much is given to God. Well, what does the Lord require? Letter A. What we give. What does the Lord require? Malachi chapter 3, verse 8. You're familiar with the verse. The Hebrews asked the Lord, wherein have we robbed thee? As the Lord said, in tithes
and offerings. Now, tithes and offerings in the Old Testament specifically mentioned things, plants and animals. In the New Testament, the Lord said to the disciples that they had, or to the Pharisees that they had tithed all manner of cumin and herbs and rue. They did not live on a monetary system in the Old Testament, so they brought in sheep, they brought in goats, they brought in the tenth of their harvest, brought it into the temple to sustain the priests that worked there. And so this is a, but these words were the words that used, the tithes and the offerings. The word tithe means tenth. And for time's sake, we'll not look, but I encourage you to look at Leviticus 27, verse 32. And the word tithe and tenth are both used in that verse to explain the meaning of the word tithe. The best commentary on the Bible is the Bible. The best dictionary for the Bible is the Bible. And Deuteronomy 27:32 tells us that the word tithe means a tenth. So that means that of all that God has entrusted us with, He only asks for 10%. That's a pretty good God, isn't it? The one that enables us to make anything. I mean, if He wanted to, He could lay us up and we'd be unemployed and unemployable and no way to make an income. But He gives us the health and the strength and the discipline to maintain a work and to maintain a job. And then on top of that, we get money for it. And then God simply says, all right, now after that work week is done and when you get your money, I just want you to give one-tenth of that in appreciation back to Me. The tenth is the easiest percentage to figure out. 10%, you can't go wrong with 10%. If you make $124, you just take off the end, that's $12.40 is 10%. Now, I don't mean to pick on anybody, but it always cracks me up when I see people give their tithe and it's $123.43. God forbid we should round up to $124 or $125. We got to make sure we give God exactly that tenth and put the decimal point in there, bless God. We don't want God to get a penny too much. Now, if you do that, I'm sorry. I just think that's funny. But God asks for 10%. If you make $400 per week, that's $10 an hour, which is good money around here. If you make $40 per week, $40 belongs to God. You've heard me say this before. When I come on Sunday, and it's in my pocket up here, when I come on Sunday, the first thing I do when the offering comes is get God's money out of my pocket. Whatever I made for that week, 10% of that belongs to God. If I keep that, that's keeping money that doesn't belong to me. So first thing I do is get God's money out of my pocket. Offering. So the word tithe means 10%. Offerings are anything we give above the tithe. God said, the Jews said, where have we robbed thee? In tithes and offerings. If we give 10%, that's our duty. And I'm reminded of that verse, we are miserable servants, we have done that which is our duty to do. If we give God our 10%, we have given the minimum. We have given what we have to give, bless God, because we have to give it. An offering is anything above that. We take our missions offering on Sunday night. I give my tithe on Sunday morning. I give my missions offering on Sunday night. That's above my tithe. That's in addition. That's my offering. We raise money for a car for the Filipino lady that comes here. And I want to let you know we bought it. She's got it. And she hasn't showed up again since we gave it to her. That's funny if you think about it. That's usually the way things work. We got her a car for $1,400, a little Toyota Camry, and bought it and got it licensed and took it down to her so now she can get here on Sundays, hopefully, and she'll be here this Sunday. And many of you gave toward that. That is an offering. We've raised money for different things. The pages are out there for the money that we raised for the Orphan Foundation to build four of the orphan houses, and they built the first one. And the letters out there on the ledge out there. And the little plaque they put up from our friends from Bysville, Ohio. They can't put a church name because it's in Vietnam, a communist country, but it says, our friends in Bysville, Ohio. And it gives us a report of who lives in that house and what their situation is. And that money was raised by offerings above the tithe. So what we're to give is our tithes and offerings. Letter B, when we give it. 1 Corinthians 16:2 says, upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store as God hath prospered him. On the first day of the week. You know what the first day of the week is, right? Sunday. Most people get paid at the end of the week, usually on Friday. And so the minute we get paid, we say, all right, Lord, 10% of this belongs to you right here. And then my missions or my offering, whatever I'm giving on top of that, and we give it on the first day of the week. I have an issue sometimes with forgetfulness. And not so much lately, but in the past, I would forget to write my check and put it in my pocket and bring it Sunday morning. And the treasurer got so used to me forgetting that he would send the kids back up during handshaking time, and they'd take the offering plate and stand in front of me and just wave it like that. Because they knew it wasn't that I wasn't giving, I just forgot. But we want to do that the first day of the week when we get together. We give our money back to God. Upon the first day of the week, Paul said, let every one of you lay by him in store as God hath prospered him. See again, the 10% is not the same for everybody as far as the dollar amount. Remember the people in the temple giving of all of their income? Then the widow gave her mite that was all of her living, and God said she's given more than them. Why? Because it's not about the dollar amount. It's about what we give from what we have. Letter C, where we give. There in 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 1, Paul says, as I have given order to the churches of Galatia, he's writing to the church at Corinth, and he said, I'm writing to you just like I did to the churches of Galatia. When it comes to giving in the churches, so do ye. We give in the church. I appreciate homeless shelters, feeding the poor, taking care of the starving in Ethiopia, sending money to veterans organizations. Good night. Our home phone, the only time our home phone rings anymore, unless it's from Grandma Ruth, the only time our home phone rings is when it's a telemarketer wanting money for every cause under the sun. The FOP, police department, the GOP, I'm trying to think of some other initials. I don't know any others. Everybody's calling wanting that money. You know, the only money that we get credit for from God is what we give through the church. Again, I'm not saying it's wrong to give to anything outside of the church, but the things that God gives us credit for on our account are those that go through the church. Where we give. Back in Malachi, it says, bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, that my house may be full. Again, in the Old Testament, they didn't meet in the church. They met in the temple. And the storehouse is where everything was stored in the temple. But it was a place of worship. Letter D, why we give. Jesus said to the Pharisees, and I referred to this earlier, you tithe mint and rue and all manner of herbs. And he said, but you pass over the heavier, weightier matters of the law, love and judgment. He said, these ye ought to have done, and not to leave the others undone. I'll let you look at that verse later. But basically he said, you're supposed to tithe. Why we give? Because the Lord commands it. We're supposed to. A lot of folks say, well, tithing is Old Testament. Well, it was before the law. Abraham and Jacob tithed. It was during the law. And then it's after the law. Jesus taught it. Paul taught it. The Lord taught it in 1 Corinthians 16. So it's not something that was relegated to an Old Testament dispensation. It's a biblical truth. That's the pattern for our giving. Then lastly, letter E, who we give to. Deuteronomy 27:30 says, the tithe is the Lord's. It is holy unto the Lord. The tithe is the Lord's. Again, getting God's money out of our pocket. My friend, the missionary Paul Frizzell, tells the story of one of his boys when they were really little and going to Sunday school, and he gave him a quarter. And he told the boy, he said, I'm giving you this quarter. I want you to give it to Jesus in Sunday school. So the boy was all excited, and he took the quarter.
After church, they were driving home, and the boy was sitting in the back seat, and he was flipping that quarter. And Dad looked back at him and said, "Son, I thought I told you to give that quarter to Jesus." He said, "Jesus never showed up." He wasn't being smart, Alec. He just thought that was, he was waiting for Jesus to give him the quarter. We give to the Lord by giving through the church. Stewardship. Can I challenge you to examine yourself, as I need to examine myself? How are we doing with God, with the stewardship of the time God has given us? How are we doing in the area of stewardship with the talents God has given us? And how are we doing in the area of stewardship with the treasures God has entrusted us? All things are given to us by Him richly to enjoy. But one of these days we'll give an account as stewards. Let's stand together tonight with our heads bowed and our eyes closed. Father, tonight it's a